On this episode of The Big Number, we dive into the stats to answer the following questions. Are the LeBron James Philadelphia 76ers now the title favorite? We will get into that, as well as will Philly and Boston play on Christmas Day? We've got our Christmas Day slate already drawn up now that LeBron James is a Philadelphia 76er. And lastly, is Bronny James next going to Philadelphia? All this and more coming up right now. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to The Big Number. I am Tom Haberstroh. And as always, we are joined every week with my man, your man, Dan Devine. Dan, we've got a breaking news here. LeBron James has made his decision finally on Friday afternoon. A Friday news dump by LeBron James that he is signing with the Philadelphia 76ers on a two-year deal. I'm legitimately shocked. I think they were the fourth most likely team, according to all the prediction markets, and just I think in talking to people, Philadelphia, I never had them as the front runner. In my mind, it was Miami or Cleveland. And here he announces on his Instagram, or sorry, on X, as well as this tweet here from Shams Charania that he is signing on a two-year, $8 million deal. Dan, your first reaction.
Thank goodness this happened before we were recording the show. It gives us the opportunity to react to this live. What a nice thing when the content actually lines up properly. My first thought was it was the only place that didn't seem, or of the main four finalists or however we were describing them, that didn't have a previous emotional connection, right? There wasn't the return home for Cleveland. There wasn't the, I go back to where I kind of grew up in the league in Miami. There wasn't the, you know, one last ride with Stephen Curry, you know, in Golden State. So like, what is the draw in Philadelphia? And what we have learned, you know, what LeBron said in his statement here that he tweeted out, I'm sure we'll discuss that. And what ESPN's Dave McMenamin had said that a source related to him was basically like this, he views this as his best opportunity to win a championship among the options that are available, which is really interesting considering the Cleveland Cavaliers just made the Eastern Conference Finals without him, considering the Miami Heat just traded for a guy named Giannis Antetokounmpo. Pretty good. And, you know, and obviously Golden State has been, you know, a multiple time champion over the course of his tenure there. So like the interesting thing is makes me think, were we undervaluing what the 76ers roster could be after the Jaylen Brown trade? Were we rightly skeptical of how that fit might come together? And obviously the Joel Embiid question. So is LeBron looking at that and seeing a real, like, this is a ready-made title contender? Or is this like just the best of some maybe imperfect options?
Yeah. So let's read here his comment here, because there's some interesting things. Let's break this down. It is surprising. The big number was going to be zero, the number of times that the Philadelphia 76ers have made it to the conference finals in the last 25 years. Last time was in 2001, and then that was with Allen Iverson going to the NBA Finals against the Lakers, the Tyronn Lue step-over game. That was the last time they've gone to the NBA Finals, and it's been since 1983 that they've gone to won a title. So this is 43 years of a title drought that LeBron James is trying to reverse. And here he says, I thought I was done when the season ended. I wasn't really ready to announce it. I knew I needed some time to really decide, but I was pretty sure I played my last game. Side note, I don't really believe that. secondly, he goes, I was honest at that last press conference when I said I needed to look at myself and decide if I still love this game. I truly love this game, and I have more to give. The last few weeks have been really been special. I've never been able to have no clue what to do and take real time to just think. I've had an incredible few months with all the people. I love trying to figure it all out. This is big. This is my last decision. I'm not going for money. I'm not going for family. What am I really playing for at this point? I still want to sacrifice. I still want to work. I still want to grind. I still want to compete to win and to have a chance at the feeling of winning another championship. I believe I can make the Philadelphia 76ers a championship team, and I am so excited to energize a new fan base and start this incredible journey one last time. Thank you, LA. Miami, I'll forever love. And Northeast Ohio will always be home, and a bunch of emojis. Dan, the first thing there is, this is my last decision. Okay. Obviously, he's going to Philadelphia to win a championship. We knew that. He's not going there to just have fun with Vijay Edgecombe, right? That's not it. What it is he's making his last decision, and I still hold out belief that he is going to do this again. Maybe not to the extent of I'm going to waste, 3 weeks of everyone's time and drag this out almost until August to figure out where my next spot is. But I feel like LeBron James made a choice here based on his relationship with Rich Paul and Bob Myers. The organization, there's not many ties, but Bob Myers went on the Game Over podcast with Rich Paul and basically laid out the blueprint about why he feels like he has the best championship chance with the Philadelphia 76ers. And if you kept your third eye open, like Dan was mentioning there, he was the only one. It's not like Steph Curry went on the Game Over podcast. It's not like Pat Riley did. Pat Riley went on Lebatard. And it's not like Cleveland, you saw Kobe Altman or Kenny Atkinson or Donovan Mitchell go on and make the case. But the one that made the case was the president of basketball operations, Bob Myers, who, goodness gracious, since Daryl Morey left and got fired by the Philadelphia 76ers, they hire Mike Gansey to be the GM. And Bob Myers makes the coup of the century here when you get Jaylen Brown for Paul George and picks, and then LeBron James on a player or a 2 year with a player option in the second year, vet minimum $3.9 million. At first, I'm like, man, that's a lot of money to pay for Jaylen Brown. But on the other side, it's like, if you're getting Jaylen Brown and LeBron James for that cap hit, yeah, it's a totally different calculus. And that's why Bob Myers was placed in that position by Josh Harris, is that he can bring a guy like LeBron James to Philadelphia. That up until this point, the reputation of Philadelphia basketball has been a lot of hype, a lot of injuries, a lot of heartbreak, and not a lot of championship aspirations. I mean, this LeBron James move is seismic. I don't think I put them above the New York Knicks for the championship favorite. I think the biggest injury question in the game is Joel Embiid, and that remains with LeBron James. And I think, actually, LeBron James, you're going to see a lot of LeBron at the five. But Dan, the fit questions are still here that I don't know how you can look at the Philadelphia 76ers and say they're the championship favorites now when everything rests on Joel Embiid's health, 38 games played last year, and has not been healthy for a postseason run, a deep postseason run in his entire career. And they don't have much in the way of backups there. Ariel Hakpoorti is the backup center, Adembona. I have serious questions about whether they're built to win a championship right now in the front court. In the backcourt, certainly. But Dan, LeBron James, I think, was looking to go to a team that he didn't have to play 75 games in the regular season and carry them in the postseason. But with LeBron James and Joel Embiid, I still worry. And maybe those worries wouldn't be allayed in any other place. You know, like I would still have injury questions around Giannis, still have injury questions around Draymond and Steph and Kristaps Porzingis, James Harden at this point. Dan, I kind of feel like I'm nitpicking here by saying the 76ers still, I'm not willing to go and put them as the championship favorites, even though they got Jaylen Brown and LeBron James. Am I crazy?
I don't think that's crazy. I mean, there's so much to dig into here. I'm glad that we're having a live podcast today to do it. You mentioned the Joel Embiid component. Obviously, this is the big swing. It was going to be the big swing factor before the LeBron deal. It is the big swing factor. Now, the entire enterprise here rests upon the health of Joel Embiid. He has played over the last three seasons 109 total regular season and playoff games. Over those three seasons, with him on the floor, plus 356 in just over 3,600 minutes, with him off the floor, minus 729 in just over 9,200 minutes. It is the gulf. It is the Grand Canyon of effectiveness in terms of being on the floor and off the floor. Ariel Hakpoorti was the third string center on the Knicks. Adembona got played off the floor in the sweep at the hands of the Knicks. I don't know that they are changing your life in those situations. I think the idea of LeBron at the five in the non-Embiid minutes or in those games where Embiid is not available, I think that's interesting. I don't know that it's an answer, but if you're looking at what are our available ways to improve this roster as it exists with basically just a little over the minimum available to us, or the minimum available to us, hard to come up with a better answer than LeBron James, who, again, last we saw him, was averaging 23.7 rebounds and 7 assists per game in the playoffs and was the best player on a team that won an opening round playoff series. So that's a decent answer at the minimum. Also, just as a fun numerology note, yes, he's making that to just 2 years. It comes out to around $8 million, the player option for year two. What percentage of the salary cap will he account for, according to Bobby Marks of ESPN? 2.3% of the salary cap. Open your third eye. Number 23, not retired in Philadelphia. Number 2, retired for Moses Malone. Number 3, retired for Allen Iverson. And I think that it brings me sort of to the narrative component of this, right? You mentioned the podcasting and the discussions of what would make the best sort of basketball fit. In the course of some of these discussions over the last several weeks, I believe Rich Paul had said, if the Knicks hadn't won this year, then he would just be going to New York, right? And so there's that idea of ending a drought, of what are teams that are franchises that have some historical heft to them. The Sixers haven't won a championship since 1983. They are the franchise, though, of Dr. J, of Moses Malone, of Charles Barkley, of Allen Iverson. There's there's legitimate history to this organization. There have been elite players. There have been all-time, historical greats. There have been big moments, but there haven't been championship moments in, 40-odd years. I believe it's the 10th longest active championship drought in the NBA. I mean, there are franchises that have never won, but among those who have won, it's the Blazers in 77, the Wizards in 78, and then the Sixers in 83. And that's the longest drought. So you have, it's not a glamour franchise, but it is an historic franchise in the NBA. It does tie LeBron to some of the, further those connections to some of the all-time greats of the league, allows him to put himself in that familiar red, white, and blue that we've seen legends in before. And yes, if you wind up being the finishing piece or the final piece that brings a title back to Philly, hard to imagine much of a better way to walk out of the game than saying, I did it again. I brought another title to another organization. Obviously, a lot to be, nitpick that and skeptical about in terms of how it actually works. I think you're right to say the Knicks as presently constituted still would, be at the top of the pecking order there, but I haven't looked at the betting odds. I haven't looked at the over-unders or whatever. I wouldn't be surprised if Philly, especially with like the Kawhi Leonard deal still up in the air, with the hit that this deals to, the Miami Heat, that deals to the Cleveland Cavaliers. These are the rosters that don't have much in the way of options to improve themselves at this late stage of the offseason. I wouldn't be surprised if Philly winds up sitting number 2 in a lot of those, the odds or the over-unders or whatever. And in some places, maybe even number 1, just because it is very fun to imagine the high-end outcome of a starting 5 of Joel Embiid, LeBron James, Jaylen Brown, Vijay Edgecombe, and Tyrese Maxey. I think the nitty-gritty of how that all fits together, who takes a step back, who's able to be on the ball more, et cetera. All of those questions that we had, as you mentioned, after the Jaylen Brown signing, go double now. There's going to also some pretty big personalities in that setting. Some guys who have accomplished an awful lot, who rightly have the understanding that they should probably be the guy that makes the decisions here. Be interesting to see how it all shakes out.
You're talking about Dean Wade there, right?
Yep. Yeah. I was here first, LeBron. Mike Gansey got this job. He came in with his jersey over his t-shirt. He came in and he did one job and he brought me in. He paid me more than he paid you, LeBron. So you better get back. And we're going to run layup lines. I'm starting first. I'm getting the ball first. I'm Dean Wade, damn it.
It is crazy. He teamed up with D Wade in Miami and now is Dean Wade in Philadelphia. I don't think that's incredible. Like a small thing that Dean Wade got signed to the mid-level there in Philadelphia, considering we were talking about this with Cleveland, is who's going to be the on-ball defender on the wing, lockdown defender that you could throw at the opposing team's best perimeter scorer. And that guy who can play multiple positions, defend at a high level, was Dean Wade. And now he goes and teams up with LeBron in Philadelphia. Is Dean Wade going to be the key piece that's going to put them over the edge in the conference finals, the finals? I don't think so. It's going to be LeBron or Jaylen Brown, Embiid healthy. But there really isn't many holes in this roster if Embiid's healthy. Like, that's a huge if. That's a gigantic if, as big of an if as you will find in the league. If Joel Embiid is healthy, there are no holes in this roster. You would maybe want more shooting, but they just signed Anfernee Simons as a backup off the bench, who's one of the best knockdown shooters in the guard position, both off the catch and on the ball. And getting him on the cheap for $6 million this season on a make good deal, try to get back onto the market next year, seems like to me an extremely fortuitous move by Bob Myers and Mike Gansey to bring in these two guys, Anfernee Simons and Dean Wade. They also have Dominic Barlow at the forward position, Jabari Walker that they signed. They have two-way guys from the Portland Trailblazers. They got Caleb Love and Ryan Rupert. So they got Love, K-Love, and they got D. Wade on the team. That's nuts.
I mean, listen, history doesn't repeat, but it rhymes. I think you're right. You know, you point out, you know, there's the wing spot off the bench. You know, when you look at it and you say, well, yeah, it's Jabari Walker, it's, you know, Justin Edwards, it's Dalen Terry. You know, like it doesn't necessarily leap off the page and say like, oh, that is a murderer's row in that situation. But also, again, I feel like we've talked about this a few times before. And it's like the long tail of the KD era Warriors, where you look at a roster and if you can see anything that isn't like perfect, you're like, trash. These guys are, there's no way they can win a title with this. And it's like, well, we just saw, you know, that Knicks team was not perfect. It was deep in interesting ways, but it was like there were holes. It's just a matter of can you fortify your weaknesses? Can you amplify your strengths? Can you put yourself in position to make up for whatever those weak spots are? And I think if you are starting or you have both Jaylen Brown and LeBron James at the 3-4 spots, and you're able to, in those mix and match units, you know, you're not saying those guys are, it's like a hockey line change and all those guys go off and we're saying, and now we just need to like roll the Dalen Terry, Justin Edwards lineup for 8 minutes and see how it goes. There's obviously going to be a lot of mixing and matching. And that's, you add LeBron as a, obviously somebody who has proven over the course of his career can do basically anything you need him to do on the court. And that was like the kind of grace note at the end of his time in LA was, he adjusted to a more like a super role player kind of role as the third, you know, the third dog at the bull behind Luka Doncic and Austin Reeves in the offensive pecking order. And so you say, well, all right, where's the backup point guard when Tyrese Maxey's off the floor? All right, well, you can run offense through LeBron James pretty all right. You can run offense through Jaylen Brown, like give him the ball and let him be able to create. You can have those guys interact in, you know, screening for one another, or, you know, being able to find a mismatch that they like. And both of those guys are really good at sort of punishing smaller defenders with their back to the basket. You know, you can, again, you can allow, like, if you're trying to figure out how do we make the most out of these, you know, sort of like screen dive, not altogether super skilled bigs and guys like Adem Bona and Ariel Hakporti, pick and roll LeBron, you know, it's been pretty successful over the course of the last 24 years of NBA history. You know, there's ways to make that work with a dive man and you got shooters around. And then, yeah, Maxey becomes, you know, he's over the course of his career, he has shifted from being more of an off-ball player to somebody who could be a high usage on-ball pick-and-roll attacker. But like he's a hell of a movement shooter. He can shoot off the catch. You can have him on either end of those pick-and-rolls. The options are really, really interesting for how this team can play. And it means that like your, you know, ninth, 10th guy might not be quite as big of a concern because you've got so many other ways you can mix and match those top eight, top nine. And I think Nick Nurse, how, you know, to go from like, I don't really know what my options were on the wing, as he was like just basically trying to get through four dudes at a time in that Knicks series. And now it's like, all right, how do I integrate LeBron? How do I integrate Jaylen Brown? How do we integrate Dean Wade? How do we make all these new pieces fit together? I think Nick Nurse has sort of always been like the new school Tibbs in terms of his relative lack of comfort with like going deep into his roster. He's got more options to go to now. It'll be very interesting to see how he deploys them.
If you get like, you take your glasses off and you can't see very well, I guess we should have seen this coming when they drafted LeBaron Filon, which sure. Sounds a lot like LeBron to Philly. If you kind of look at the name a little bit, this is the next level analysis.
Tom Haberstroh.
You got Dean Wade, you got Caleb Love, and LeBaron Filon. This is all right. Nick Nurse is going to have a heck of a time dealing out a lot of or massaging a lot of these egos, because Tyrese Maxey is one of the best, if not best, on-ball scorers in the league. And then you bring in Jaylen Brown on top of that and LeBron James. and Joel Embiid. It was already going to be a usage crunch there in Philly before you added LeBron, who's one of the most heliocentric players we've ever seen, if not number one on that list that he creates for others. And one of the reasons why, you know, it makes it interesting that he left Luka and Austin Reeves to go away from LA to Philly, because part of the idea is he had to take a backseat to the Luka Doncic show on the court and off the court. I don't think LeBron James enjoyed that aspect of it, but now Tyrese Maxey, who's repped by Rich Paul, is, I think LeBron
funny
James
how that works kinda, out.
Yeah, I think it's one of the most under-told stories in the league. Is like, why is it important that Rich Paul represents all these players? It's because he has intel and has a voice in the room, and someone who's lived in that organization can tell you how it is in that Philadelphia locker room. So LeBron James has a direct line to Rich Paul, who has a direct line to Tyrese Maxey about what the dynamics are at play in Philly. And of course, those relationships were extremely strong. When you look at Bob Myers, who went against LeBron James all those years in Golden State, and then goes on the podcast with Rich Paul, which is one of the most shocking media moments of the last few years, is that in the LeBron James free agency decision and the saga, the sweepstakes, you have a president of one of the teams in the running making the pitch on Rich Paul's podcast, his agent's podcast. It just completely disrupts everything we know about media in 2026, and it worked. Evidently, it worked. I mean, rights to Ricky has to be just doing backflips right now. Dave McMenamin, a Philly guy, huge fan of the 76ers, covering LeBron James all these years, now gets to go back home and cover LeBron James in that red, white, and blue. I also think about the other side of this. Dan, like, the team that hurts the most here, I think, is Golden State. Cleveland fans would probably feel a certain way about him spurning them and going to the Philadelphia 76ers, a team in the same conference. James Harden presumably will be back on a multi-year deal after he opted out of his contract. But what are the Golden State Warriors doing? You know, like, when you have Steph Curry in his prime still playing at a high level, and your roster is got two guys, Moses Moody and Jimmy Butler, with basically next season is a wash, eating up so much of their cap, you would think that maybe they flip the Jimmy Butler contract for one last hurrah with Steph Curry. But no, they don't make that move. They did not, as far as we can tell, they were not willing to make a trade for Anthony Davis. If that ever was a possibility, making a trade with the Washington Wizards, using the Jimmy Butler contract as an expiring deal, and trading him to the Washington Wizards. Yesterday on the Kevin O'Connor show, we kind of speculated. We were wondering, is LeBron going to drag this out until August 6th, thereby knowing if the Washington Wizards would extend Anthony Davis, and then he would have all the perfect information to make his decision. We thought maybe that was why he held out for so long. I don't know why it took this long for LeBron. Like, what sort of things did he need? What boxes did he need to check? But clearly, the Golden State Warriors did not. Joe Lacob, Mike Dunleavy Jr., Steph Curry, Draymond Green, they did not do the full court press to land LeBron James in Golden State. And considering how awesome it was to watch them in Paris together, LeBron and Steph, and having that one last hurrah for, I don't know about both of them, but certainly in the twilight of their careers that you could see Steph and LeBron James link up one last time, would have been awesome. I don't think the basketball gods are as excited about Philly and LeBron and the whole kind of juggling of all the egos and the ball and trying to figure out the closing situations. If LeBron is going to play the five, there's a lot that Nick Nurse and Bob Myers and Mike Gansey have to figure out. But I think of all the teams and fan bases that are most heartbroken right now, I guess it's Golden State and Cleveland for very different reasons. Golden State, to me, is so upset right now because it's clear that there really isn't much of a plan for the twilight of Steph Curry's career other than just letting this run its course. For Cleveland, they still went to the conference finals last year. Yeah, they got swept by the Knicks, But at least you have a core there that you can point to and say, hey, we still have a future with Evan Mobley, Donovan Mitchell, and James Harden. We're going to win 50 games next year and be right there in the thick of the race for the conference finals. Miami, they just got Giannis Antetokounmpo. I don't think they're going to be losing sleep over this. Certainly LeBron James helps them. But Minnesota, they got LaMelo Ball. There's still excitement there. I feel like Golden State fans have to just be really like lost. You know, like the Cleveland Cavalier fans, they don't feel lost. I think the Golden State Warriors fans just kind of feel like, what are we doing? Whereas Cleveland, there is a blueprint. They went to the conference finals. They made their deals. They were going to be in the thick of it with or without LeBron James. I just feel like the gap between getting LeBron James and not getting LeBron James, the gulf was the largest in Golden State.
Yeah, I think the Warriors, can you hit the inside straight to give yourself like one more shot at the big pot, right? Like their fallback option, the silver lining for them, such as it is one, is like, we saw what we were when we had Jimmy Butler healthy and available, and the core of what we saw with him and LeBron, him and Stephen Curry and Draymond Green, that roster, that worked in a way that was like stylistically what we like. It feels like Warriors basketball, the Steve Kerr model. And, you know, what Jimmy's return timeline looks like. I mean, obviously he was injured in the middle of last season. I don't think anyone would expect him to be back before, at the earliest, the middle of this season. What he looks like when he comes back, if he's able to get back, or whatever, you know, those things are all open questions. But there is at least an idea of, we kind of take, that was the big swing we took when we traded for Jimmy and we extended him and we said, that's the timeline. That's what we've got left. And they can make their peace to some degree with like, this is what it winds up being. I think you're, in terms of what their plan is now moving on from here, you're right. Like the plan for moving on from here is like, we keep our powder dry. We, you know, allow this to sort of take its course through the next off season or so. We figure out like who among the young guys that we do have, do we feel are building block pieces moving forward? Like, do we want to extend Brandon Pajemski or do we want to let him go into restricted free agency? You know, what kind of minutes load, what kind of role do we see for Jaxel Lendeborg? All those sorts of questions. And that's not championship competition, right? No. And so that's, I think you're right to say that the gap for them in terms of, I guess, what this could be on the high end and where you wind up after losing out is pretty vast. I think the team that I'm interested in that conversation is Minnesota. And maybe it's all much ado about nothing. I saw Anthony Edwards at Fanatics Fest and said, like, I think it was Kevin Negandhi was interviewing him and he said, well, I've seen LeBron's top three and we ain't in it. So, you know, I don't have too many thoughts about it. But at this point, they just don't have a power forward, right? Like they traded Julius Randle, they traded Naz Reid. There was a wide open spot there to fill in those minutes. You know, when we were sort of going through the research on this, they played 198 non-garbage time minutes without either Randall or Reed on the floor last year. Like they barely like four games worth. And the power forwards that did play in those minutes were guys like Kyle Anderson, Julian Phillips, Joe Ingles, and those guys aren't on the team anymore, right? And so like, where is the power forward for a team that does have an All-NBA stalwart and Anthony Edwards, is paying still big money for Rudy Gobert, did just make the big swing for LaMelo Ball, and has that expectation of, we are going to be right back in the mix in the top of the Western Conference, right? Like, we, even wounded and lesser than, we took our best shot at the Spurs in the second round, coming off of two consecutive Western Conference Finals berths, and like, they don't have a power forward right now. The immediate answer in your head is like, oh, well, they bump up Jaden McDaniels to the four. Chris Finch said in an interview this week that that's not how he sees it working. Like, he doesn't envision that being a real answer and the starting lineup for that team moving forward. So it's like, you don't have LeBron. He went somewhere else. You need a starting power forward on your roster, and it's July 24th. And you don't have any draft picks to trade anymore. And the best you can probably do in terms of a trade package to find somebody is like, expiring contracts for Josh Green and Dante DiVincenzo and maybe like Terrence Shannon as an upside swing. Like, so the opportunity cost for them of waiting to this point, nobody really, you know, you don't know exactly because you don't know what options might have been available for them. Like, could they have gotten into like the Santi Aldama discussion? All right, is that changing your life as a championship contender? Maybe not. But like, you now, you got to find a four someplace because you didn't have them before. And like, that is the gap emotionally in Golden State maybe is larger, but in terms of like what that could mean for title contention, I think Minnesota might be an even bigger swing there. And then as you know, your point about like the delta between what it could be and what it is, I think just the emotional component for Cleveland and Miami. Yeah, they've got like the Heat are going to be drying their tears with $100 bills after getting Giannis, right? They got a top five player in the world. The Cavs, they can say, well, you know, we extended Donovan Mitchell. We have, as you said, we have something we believe in that we know works. But still, you know, you love and you let go and you hope it comes back to you, and it hasn't. And so I think that hurts there. But yeah, your point is really interesting about like, what does this really do to the championship discussion, right? Like, for all that LeBron James has been and for all that he still is, how meaningfully does this, it feels seismic. Is it?
Well, yeah, this is a great question. It's like him leaving the Western Conference and going East feels deliberate. Like if he went to Minnesota, where a team that I think has probably more of a drought than Philadelphia, and less of a history with winning, you know, when it matters. To me, LeBron going East is a signal that he thinks it's an easier path besides going through Oklahoma City, going through Wemby and the San Antonio Spurs, going through Jokic in the Western Conference. He goes to an Eastern Conference that did load up in a sense. When Giannis goes to Miami, things are going to be a lot harder for Boston and Philly and Cleveland, New York, now that Giannis is upgraded, I think, next to Bam Adebayo. But I wouldn't say it's like, this really moves the needle in the championship sweepstakes. Like, I think when you look at, do the Philadelphia 76ers match up well against the Oklahoma City Thunder and San Antonio Spurs? And I would say no. They're old. Like, the two guys were going to eat up a chunk of that, of the front court minutes, LeBron and Joel Embiid. I don't know if they're going to have left enough gas in the tank come May and June in order to go against Wemby and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Chet Holmgren and Jalen Williams. You know, maybe he's looking at this and saying, okay, we've had so much parity because of injuries and because of the flattened CBA that now maybe it is just a matter of, I need to go to a new team that doesn't have the championship tax on them. The New York Knicks were not going to land LeBron James. I don't think they were going to shake things up after an immaculate, perfect run they had to win the championship with Jalen Brunson. And LeBron might be looking at this and saying, I don't know if LaMelo Ball is the guy that I trust to be a championship level competitor. And I think Philadelphia for him is in the Eastern Conference. He has a lot of star power. There were three all-stars last year: Tyrese Maxey, Jaylen Brown, LeBron James. Joel Embiid was not an all-star, but you can put him in that category. They've got more star power than any of those teams. And so he decides, look, if I'm going to go to a team that can preserve my energy of being the primary ball handler that I was in the postseason with the Lakers and have to give it my all defensively, I'm going to hitch my wagon to the Philadelphia 76ers. It's still kind of stunning to me that LeBron looked at Joel Embiid's body, his knees and his feet, and said, that's the guy. That's the guy I want to win a championship next year. But then you look around, and this is the era of DNP, the era of parity, and all it takes is one championship run. But it does feel like him going East was a deliberate decision to avoid OKC and avoid San Antonio and Nikola Jokic. And now, with Boston losing Jaylen Brown, going to Philly, I mean, just think about that. Well, let me back up here a sec and talk about the whiteboard. The whiteboard said no Darius Garland for Cleveland. And I'm now thinking, did Cleveland screw themselves by trading for James Harden?
Ooh.
If Darius Garland is on the Cleveland Cavaliers, is LeBron now a Cav? I mean, I think that's a real question, given that Rich Paul and LeBron are close to Darius Garland, gets traded to the Clippers, and did that have an impact on LeBron's decision here? Is that James Harden opted out to be a free agent? Did LeBron James want to play with James Harden? Did they have a backup plan? if LeBron James said, look, I want to go to Cleveland, but you got to find a taker for James Harden. I don't want to share the ball with Harden. Remind
me who represents Darius Garland.
Yeah, it's Rich Paul and Clutch Sports.
Oh, right.
If I can, yeah. On the top right, there you see they have Mitchell,
Garland minus
Harden, Mobley, Allen, no Garland in parentheses, minus.
Minus.
I mean,
you know, Tom, to your point about being surprised about the decision being Philadelphia, you were not the only one, according to our pal Tony Jones at The Athletic. The Sixers were surprised by LeBron James' decision, not learning of his choice to accept their offer until minutes before his statement was issued through his representation, according to a team source close to the process. Also, we heard LeBron drop a trust the process from the stage during one of his live appearances recently. So the breadcrumbs being dropped there. What an astounding decade plus it has been from the movement into the Sam Hinkie era, through the process, through the Colangelos, through, you know, and you know, Ben Simmons and Embiid and the Jimmy part of it. And it's been you can go weeks with nothing happens, and then sometimes years happen in a day, or whatever the saying is. Like, Philadelphia is like eons of development over the course of a several year period, and now it winds up with LeBron James on the Philadelphia 76ers. Going back to the numerological component of our podcast, right? The numbers here. Our friends at Synergy Sports Technology have a thing called Top League Comps. So you can look at a player's statistical profile and say, who are they most like in the league among the other players in the league in a given season? Tyrese Maxey's from last season, number one, Jalen Brunson. Number two, Anthony Edwards. Number three, Jamal Murray. So if you think about, hey, I want my point guard to be able to play off the ball. I want my point guard to be able to sometimes be in the action, sometimes be out of the action. Give me a lot of different ways to play. High volume shooter, high volume downhill threat, but also can kick and space and be able to work without the ball in a really interesting way. Be a transition player, you know, find a lot of ways to contribute. I think Tyrese Maxey has developed into that super high-end all-NBA caliber guard that, yeah, it's not just does that work off of Joel Embiid. That could work. That's going to work off of, or it certainly can work rather, off of Jaylen Brown, off of LeBron James. He doesn't have to dominate the ball to have the impact on the game because of the way he moves and shoots in a way like we saw Jalen Brunson in the playoffs when he got off the ball more. It allowed more playmaking opportunities for Karl Anthony Towns. Certainly, we've seen that a ton from a guy like Jamal Murray next to Nikola Jokic over the years. I think there's part of the argument here. It's not just that there's this other talent or they made the Jaylen Brown move. It's that Tyrese Maxey as a talent is sort of malleable and portable in a way that allows you to bring in, high volume on ball players or guys who can be sort of primary offensive hubs, because he can still be able to get his as he moves around off of it. So I think I saw we had up the Dean Oliver tweet earlier that was the collective usages of those players, and it adds up to a heck of a lot more than 100%. So yes, there will be some discussions that need to happen as far as who needs to sacrifice. I think it is notable that in his statement, LeBron used the word sacrifice and said, like, I'm still looking to do that. I'm still looking to be able to be somebody who can find a way to help a team get where it needs to go. The answer throughout almost the entirety of his career is like, what's the best way for LeBron James to help a team get where it needs to go? Give the ball to LeBron James and get out of the way. Let him figure it out. LeBron James is also smart enough to know that that might not be the case at age 42 in year 24. And he has put himself in a position where he is surrounded by playmaking talent that can work off of him or give him a spell, or that will allow him to be able to be maximized when he is the one going downhill. Like, I think this is super interesting. I think the collection of talents here, it's going to take some figuring out. It's going to take, you know, sacrifice and creativity, and, you know, maybe Nick Nurse also being willing to say, the way that I prefer to do things all the time might not be the way we need to do it. We might need to be more flexible and amenable to new ways of approaching things. But if everybody can row in the same direction here, I think there's a chance that these Sixers can go awfully far. And to go back to the initial big number you were talking about, like the zero, like the Philadelphia 76ers have not been to a conference finals in, or to the NBA finals in 26 years, right? 25 years. They have not gotten further than that in more than 40. The opportunity here is significant and it's rare. And to be able to add somebody that can be as additive as LeBron James still is, even at the most sort of, you know, if you were on the low end of his advanced metrics over the course of the last couple of years, maybe it's like top 40 player thereabouts in terms of, you know, you look at estimated plus minus, box plus minus, these different impact metrics. And he doesn't grade out nearly as well as he used to, obviously, but still better than a hell of a lot of other players. To be able to get that guy on the minimum at the end of July, that is an awfully additive component to your offense, to your team. Still the questions on the defensive end, still the questions about health. All of those things remain true. But the Sixers were, I think, in a position to maybe be pushing for like a top six spot in the East before this. And certainly they've given themselves a higher ceiling with this decision.
Yeah. And before, I had written about this, the Jaylen Brown trade. Didn't love this for Philadelphia. I just felt like Jaylen Brown is going to go on like a vengeance tour that's going to suppress VJ Edgecombe's development a little bit. And I didn't love the idea of him trying to balance a lot of the touches there with Joel Embiid. Didn't love all the playmaking and the turnovers that he has, the playmaking issues. Now that LeBron's there and they're going to be paying LeBron James $4 million and Jaylen Brown $58 million this upcoming season for a cap hit of $62 million amongst those two players. And if I had told you, Dan, that Bob Myers would get LeBron James and Jaylen Brown for an average $31 million each, that's great cap work.
Yep.
Pretty good cap work there by Bob Myers. And I do think that, speaking of Bob Myers, we know in the past that LeBron James and Daryl Morey butted heads over the China saga a few years ago, saying that Daryl Morey was misinformed about certain things, dynamics. And it raises the question, does Rich Paul, in those conversations with LeBron James, feel better about Bob Myers being there than if Daryl Morey was still running the organization? So it kind of, if we even go back up and say, how could the Philadelphia 76ers fire Daryl Morey after beating the Boston Celtics finally? Well, here's the answer. Is because Bob Myers was able to hire Mike Antsy and bring in Anfernee Simons, Dean Wade, draft Filon. You get LeBron James and Jaylen Brown on this roster. I mean, that's a home run. It's a home run. Shifting gears a little bit, we heard Adam Silver talk about how he needs to make a decision. LeBron, hurry up, let's do this, because they got schedules to break out. Now, Dan, I've written down my Christmas Day schedule. You want to hear it?
I do want to hear it.
All right, let me know what you think about these picks. All right, at number one, we're going to open with Philly and Boston. Okay, the Jaylen Brown trade, the rematch from last year, LeBron going against Jason Tatum in Boston. I feel like that writes itself. That's my number one pick. Number two, I'm going Knicks and Spurs, a rematch of not just the NBA Cup, but the NBA Finals. So that is the trilogy, Knicks versus Spurs. I mean, if you want to go back to 99, you can throw that in there too. Then third, I think you got to get OKC in there. OKC and the next young superstar, Anthony Edwards, Minnesota, LaMelo Ball, OKC on the docket there. Fourth game, you need Giannis on Christmas Day. Giannis in Miami on Christmas Day. Feel like that's a no-brainer. And I think you need the Lakers, Luka Doncic. A rematch of the 2020 bubble with a whole new cast of characters. You got Lakers, Miami Heat as the fourth game. And then rounding out the night, Dan, I need some help here. There are a lot of choices. Are you really not going to put Steph Curry on national television on Christmas Day? Are you really not going to put the Denver Nuggets and Nikola Jokic on Christmas Day? Are you going to exclude the Cleveland Cavaliers who went to the conference finals? Okay, I could see that. Are you going to?
Yes, you are.
Okay. The answer is yes. Houston, KD, I don't feel great about that. Like, that's not a must have. Kawhi and the Toronto Raptors, if that goes through, does Adam Silver want to put them on the premier date in the calendar? Not so sure. And then over here, oh, by the way, we won 60 games last year. Does anyone remember us? The Detroit Pistons? Remember us? I think I'm going Golden State-Denver as the last game, the nightcap, as the final. You got Steph versus Jokic. Feels like those are my five games. Philly versus Boston, Knicks Spurs, OKC Timberwolves, Lakers Heat, Warriors Nuggets. What say you, Dan? How do you feel about that Christmas Day slate?
Yeah, there are teams that will that have a right to be bummed out that they are not included there. I think, you know, Detroit and Cleveland would have the argument based on what Detroit's regular season was and where the Cavs got last year. However, I think your general point about the stars that need to be there is accurate. And if you're giving me the sort of choices, especially for a late, like at the nightcap there, it's got to be at least one West team, probably two West teams, given the late slot. We have seen Nuggets Warriors on Christmas before. I think it was 2023 in that, you know, that slot. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like of these, the remaining star players that will draw in a casual fan's attention in that setting, it's, yeah, Stephen Curry and Nikola Jokic they certainly have to be there. So I think you're probably right about that. I'm glad for
I'm glad for
the folks in the league office. I mean, they are able to finish their work, which is wonderful. Which I think also means that at some point soon, one of our editors is going to be like, "So write about the games you're most excited about coming this coming season." I'm going to be like, "Right, all right, I got to start writing about that," which is fine. We all have work to do. I think this is wild. I mean, also we've been going for like 45 minutes. It's wild. I didn't realize that. Time flies when you are having fun and yammering. I think the thing to sort of come away from this is I don't know, again, we said earlier, I don't know that this dramatically changes the title odds, the title picture. I think you're still going to have Oklahoma City and the Spurs heading into the season as the favorites. I think you're going to have the Knicks heading into the season as the favorites come out of the East. I do think a lot is still going to depend on the Kawhi trade, what goes through, what doesn't, et cetera, in what form, what the rosters look like, if Toronto can nudge its way into that setting. But the Sixers have given themselves a puncher's chance here. I think the fascinating kind of fluctuating numbers to watch there are like, how many minutes are you going to see that Sixers roster together on that Sixers starting five on the floor? How many games will you actually see those five players playing together? Just also as a side, like we barely mentioned him, like VJ Edgecombe was a phenomenal rookie, and now he's coming into year two, and like his opportunities are going to be dramatically reduced as a result of this, you'd imagine. How does he respond to that? You know what I mean? Also, the idea of VJ Edgecombe having to do less but be like a higher energy defensive player, transition player, he could be an absolute demon in some of these situations. So I think that's a pretty exciting possibility if he's, you know, got of the mind to do it. And also that no matter what else changes in Philadelphia, no matter which co-star, who's being traded, who's being called a liar in front of Chinese children, no matter who's in charge of any of these things, who's coaching from the bench, all these things, it's still all of it comes back to Embiid. It is biblical. It's the stuff of epic poetry. Like all of it still does come back to this one central question. Can you get Joel Embiid on the court in April, May, and June? And that's going to determine all of it. It's fascinating, fascinating stuff.
The last question here is what happens with Bronny? And he's with the Lakers. They have a roster crunch. They have 16 standard contracts or guaranteed contracts. They can only have 15 at the end of the day. And so they are in a bit of a roster crunch. Does LeBron James, as part of this signing with the Philadelphia 76ers, have an understanding with Bob Myers that he can bring his son, Bronny James Jr., over to Philadelphia? That's something that I can understand would be one of those things that would need to be decided on before he makes his decision, is like, what are the chances that my new team will trade for Bronny James? The question is for the 76ers, is they're in a little bit of a roster crunch too, is that, Bronny has a guaranteed deal this upcoming season. Bobby Marks has made a mention that they might have to waive a player. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the Philadelphia 76ers, at this point, they've got 15 guys on the roster, but the contract that LeBron James signed, here's Bobby Marks. He says, it will count for 2.35%, keep your third eye open, that's my editor input there, of the salary cap this season. Because he is signing a two-year contract with no cap relief, Philadelphia will need to either waive one of their non-guaranteed players or make a trade to clear money. They are $572,000 above apron one as is. So more deals have to be made, and the question is whether the Lakers are willing to make a deal with Bronny James to trade him to reunite with his dad, LeBron, in Philadelphia. I don't know what that trade looks like, but Philadelphia still has some work to do, and so do the Lakers. So I wouldn't be surprised if ultimately not just LeBron James is going Philly bound. They've got another bulldog defender in LeBronny James. Not really sure where he's going to find the minutes in that backcourt, but that's still to be determined. I've got lots of thoughts on that coming up on Yahoo Sports. Go check out all of our stuff that we've and still to do. Dan and I are going to have a lot of anxiety here trying to figure out, all right, now we just did a live show breaking this off the rip. Now, how am I going to, you know, bring together all my thoughts into a cogent article or essay? Stay tuned. Yahoo Sports. thank you so much for listening to us reacting live. I mean, we had a show ready for you, but this completely scrapped all of that. And
it was going to rule too. It was such a good show. There was Chip England talk. There was so much going on, but we simply can't get to it this week. So everybody stay tuned next week. Nothing but Chip England talk. Tom, thank you so much for soldiering on and doing this live with me. Thanks everybody for joining us. LeBron James is the Philadelphia 76er. Pablo Torre had the tweet earlier that was, The domino falls. Tony Roten says, trust the process. And then years down the line, LeBron James is a 76er. Who could write it? I have no idea. Unbelievable.
It was written by Tony Roten. You know? Who among us could forget it was Tony Roten who laid down the path for LeBron James to join the Philadelphia 76ers? It's a crazy sentence that LeBron James is a Philadelphia 76er. But congrats to the Sixers, rights to Ricky, the fan base. This is going to be a fun season. Philly, Boston, opening night, maybe. Because they're in the same division, the division is going to be crazy. You got the Knicks, you got the Raptors, you got Philly, Boston.
Dude, their NBA Cup group is Knicks, Sixers, Pacers, Heat, and Cavs. That's the NBA Cup group for those teams. It's like... Super incestual and tied in and everything. It's going to be wild. So many things to break out. I didn't think I was going to be talking about NBA Cup Group B. And here we are, is where we find ourselves as we head into what's going to be an interesting rest of the day and one hell of a 2026-27 season.
Friday News Dump. Thanks, LeBron. Emmy, Brad, behind the scenes, thank you for making this live show out of the blue. A reality. Go subscribe if you haven't. Hit that subscribe button on that YouTube channel. We'll be back next week with another edition of The Big Number. Thanks, everyone. Have a great weekend.